when you see me. You know that I'm for you. Powers when we work to get what is due. Powers so strong, coming right at you. Can't be beaten back, no matter what you do. Powers everything.
Molotov cocktail.
You're listening to the Pedal Revolutionary Radio Show, and the time now is 5 past 5, and it's great to have Ipni back in the show. She missed us last week, and
well, not entirely, only mostly. I was still rolling, though. There were still wheels involved.
What trouble were you up to last week?
Well, I went to a couple weeks ago I went to Portland and had a great time down there. I spent a lot of time down at Free Geek Portland and with wonderful Portland bikers. I'd like to send out congratulations to Free Geek Vancouver for becoming an official nonprofit.
Go, yay! Free Geek Vancouver.
Go Reds.
So we got a pretty jam-packed show today.
We do.
You have an interview with Monkey Warfare. Who's Monkey Warfare?
Well, Monkey Warfare is a film that's going to be opening up on Friday night. It's directed by a former Vancouverite. Well, he's actually from Ladner, but we'll let that slide. So we'll be playing that. Also, you asked me where I was. I was also in Victoria celebrating the 30-year birthday of the Recyclistas. So I'd like to wish a little birthday out to them.
I love those guys. They do so much good stuff out there in Victoria.
It's awesome. So that first song was Power to the People, and it's off the soundtrack to Monkey Warfare, which is going to be opening up. We'll play some of the interview. We're going to play a big chunk of it first, and then we'll play another song, and we'll play another chunk. So it's we're actually going to sit here and sip cocktails by the pool while the show takes care of itself.
Jacuzzi.
Oh,
hot tub.
It's true. It's that time of year. And get a foot massage by small, naked people.
Okay, so that's track one.
Sure, yeah. Let's hear the introduction so you can identify the voices.
RKEMA, I am the director of Monkey Warfare.
Cindy Wool. Do I have to spell it?
There's an E on the end of that wool.
No.
It's like the animal.
You
can do an interpretive dance for us of your name.
Radio dance.
I acted in
whoa.
A film.
Okay, stop now.
What?
Stop your interpretive dance. It's too much for me.
It is pretty amazing.
My name is Flick Harrison. My socialist sunglasses just broke.
Oh.
Yeah, just the screw fell out somewhere. My Mountain Equipment sunglasses.
If they were capitalist, they probably would have broken anyway.
Shoddy. They would have broken sooner. In the film, I am the Molotov cocktail safety instructor. My scene will probably be removed from the film for legal reasons.
Hello. There we go. So that was Flick Harrison, Cindy Wolf, and Reg Harkema introducing themselves. Flick just mentioned a Molotov cocktail instructional video, which I believe will be playing after the end of the movie on Friday, but I'm not sure because it is slightly dicey material and it will not be distributed with the regular movie. So if you'd like to see that, it's on our website. That's pedalrev.blogspot.com if you're just itching to get a little view into a somewhat guerrilla world in a friendly and non-threatening way. Also, we're going to be giving away a record. The soundtrack to the movie was only released in vinyl form, so if you would like to compete for one of those copies, you will be able to pick it up at the premiere screening on Friday, and to do that, you need to call the station. It's 604-UBC-CITR. Should we make them do anything?
Tap dance?
Yeah, okay, so you have to tap dance while spelling the word gorilla, and that's as in animal gorilla. Yeah, fair enough, but some people have Google and dictionaries at home. Okay, so we're going to listen to the rest of the interview. Enjoy yourselves, and we'll see you a little bit later.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the movie, because we haven't even talked about it. We haven't even, like, nobody even knows who you guys are. We'll have to put this part at the beginning. So,
Hello!
Hi! Welcome to the Pedal Revolutionary Show. There is a movie that's come out called Monkey Warfare, and it does, while it's not entirely devoted to bikes, it certainly has kind of some underlying elements that relate very much to the reality of a lot of cyclists out there. I think in preface, one of the things that I thought was really interesting to see was things that I've never seen represented on the screen before. For example, people taking the lane. I've never seen that other than in documentaries about critical mass. I've never seen anyone talking about it as something that exists, let alone as legitimate, let alone showing people having fun doing it.
Right? People taking the what?
Taking the lane.
Like when, you know, the montage with Tracy and Don, where they're pushing Nadia on the bike.
With the chain.
Yeah.
You did direct
cars.
No, I just didn't know
cars are honking.
That's the phrase. Taking the lane.
Yeah.
Taking the lane. Owning.
Allowing cars to illegally pass.
Yeah.
Okay, everyone listening at home, you're going to sample this and make a song out of it. Everyone, we're all going to say taking the lane. One, two, three. Taking the lane.
That'll be a great cell phone ring.
Your horn.
So,
MP3 horn.
I guess I want to know, like, I'm a little bit tipsy now, because this is actually not the beginning of the interview, but kind of near the middle.
So we're drinking out of the bike
Because we're drinking out of the bike water bottle. That came from Portland, actually, that our sister city. And
the whiskey?
Pedalpalooza.
That's my sister
bottle.
City.
It's your sister city?
Well, where my sister lives.
So it's literally your sister city.
Yeah, we love Portland. Portland and Amsterdam.
Wow, see, I've never been. What's it like? Is it bike heaven or what?
It's bike heaven. I see Monkey Warfare as a movie about Toronto as if it was Amsterdam. Toronto has a vision of Amsterdam.
How important do you think bicycles are going to be in the coming kind of struggles that are going on about over resources? Is that an out-of-the-blue question?
Every day I read about bicycle suicide bombs in Iraq.
Yeah,
that seems to be a new thing. Yeah, just increasingly you read about bicycle bombs. Mm-hmm. So in terms of struggles, they got those hollow tubes.
This bike is not a pipe bomb. Do you know them? Mm-hmm. They're a band.
Oh, really?
And, somebody had a sticker on their bike. This bike is a pipe bomb. I'm sorry. I'm thinking it's an impossible.
We're trying to fool them by saying it's not a pipe bomb. It actually is.
But some guy had his bike at a campus parked with a sticker. This bike is a pipe bomb from the band, and his bike was actually commandeered, and I believe it was cordoned off, and it may have been disposed of because there was confusion about what that sticker might actually mean.
Robot.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, sorry, can I just say an Amsterdam story? Yeah. Biking in Amsterdam, it's pretty crazy. I haven't biked there, but all the bikes, first of all, they all have really old bikes, because I guess there's so many stolen all the time that they just all have old bikes. And they have two locks. They have a lock. There's a key. There's actually on the back wheel, there's a key that you stick in and just turn it, and it locks the back wheel.
They did it in Japan, too, and it's so simple.
It's clever, and then they have another lock as well. But the bikes, for some reason, it's, like, so harmonious, because there'll be so many bikes, there's hardly any cars, and there's tons of bikes, and there'll be, like, a cross light will go green, and everyone starts going, and it's, like, a crowded, like, a downtown Toronto or New York crosswalk, because it's so busy, and then bikes will just go through the crowd without even slowing down, and it's incomprehensible. I have no idea how they do it. They just zip through it full.
They have their own
helmets.
They have their own lane. There's
a
separate
crowd without helmets.
And none of them wear helmets.
They do.
Good point, Reg.
But they have a separate bike lane and a separate pedestrian lane in Amsterdam.
Well, but also
and you're supposed to, like, you know, if you're a ped crossing the bike lane, you're supposed to, like, watch out.
Yeah, get out of the way.
Yeah. It's what people expect. Pedestrians don't get pissed off because they understand that the cyclists won't hit them. If you understand that, you can come close to things. It's like driving in countries without traffic lights. Cars drive really close to each other and they all do all sorts of crazy things, but everybody's negotiating with each other all the time.
Yeah, you're aware.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think awareness is maybe the thing that we're the most lacking of in North American streets.
Yeah, fucking no kidding.
Yeah, you're right.
I think maybe we could talk about the solutions that are represented in the film. Some of them are rather radical. Like, were you being tongue-in-cheek?
Well, it's not that I'm being tongue-in-cheek. It's just...
And for people who haven't seen the movie yet, which they won't have, maybe we'll mention what that is, one of which has to do with a scene in which people take baseball bats to an SUV.
I don't posit those as possible solutions to anything. I mean, they're simply... to me, revenge fantasies, right?
Did you make this movie just so you could smash a
yeah,
so you, baseball
a case
bat?
Could be made. After that Humvee incident, you know, the smashing of an SUV became like a central scene in the movie and sort of written around. You know, I mean, I have to admit that if the cyclists all over the land saw my movie and got inspired to take baseball bats to SUVs, fucking, that'd be awesome. I'd be sitting in the corner chuckling. But I don't expect it to happen. and because of that, I actually just do see it more as a revenge fantasy. You know, if I was black and in Compton in the late 80s, I'd be singing about cops being killed, right? But, you know, on the
side. Were you black in Compton in the 80s?
No, if. I was.
What are you angry with SUVs about? What are you angry with?
Well, because I have been almost run over so many times by them, you know? I mean, you're sitting at an intersection and taking up this same space that any car would take up, and suddenly a Humvee is honking at you, you know, simply because I guess they think that, well, he's a cyclist, so he can move over to the side. And they start, like, trying to threaten to run you down, you know, it makes you angry. Mm-hmm. It makes you very angry. So it's cathartic, you know. And
they're really unsafe to even people who are driving them. Like, they're totally top-heavy. They turn over, you know, on a dime. You know, I mean, they're less safe, and they're less safe than my 64 Mercury. And not only that, but they, like, get the same mileage as my 64 Mercury mm-hmm. park.
Maybe
line.
Less.
Okay.
It's between 12 and
my 64 Mercury Park Lane gets the same mileage as a typical like big SUV. That's
right. And what I see as a revenge fantasy, in the film, it's very easy to actually portray it as the reality of someone who's much younger and more idealistic and thinks that they can actually affect some sort of change by a violent act like that. I mean, you know, I don't participate in going around smashing SUVs because I really don't see that it'll make much difference, but I can certainly see how somebody much younger than me with a head full of terrorist pornography would see how it could affect some change.
Is that your next film, Terrorist Pornography?
No, that's the current film.
But the other, I mean, the thing is, it's also like, okay, the whole reason Humvees exist, the way they exist, they're classified as a light truck simply so they can get away from the emission standards of a car.
Yes.
They can actually pollute more than a car. They're designed and classified in order to pollute more than a car.
And they get a tax break.
They get a tax break.
Not the commercial
trucks should be getting any
excellent.
Of them, but
and they get like a, they're like, they started out in 200,000 and slowly because of the market, they've sold enough of them to Arnold Schwarzenegger and people like him that they started like making them broader in terms of marketing and lowering the price until they spread out. The entire purpose, it's a typical luxury bullshit vehicle. The entire purpose of it is to show off how rich you are and how you don't give a fuck.
That's part of driving a Hummer. Yeah. Accepting, I kind of think that driving cars is a bit like smoking was, you know, 15 years ago, where some people were already ahead of the game and realizing this was a really antisocial thing to do and very destructive, and other people were kind of thinking, I'm going to do it and I'm going to like it. Screw you if you don't like it. And now we're getting to the point where like people are driving scooters, which are like smoking light cigarettes.
But I think,
I mean, I appreciate your parallels, but at the same time, like, our governments and our politicians need to realize that. I mean, I was just thinking, why hasn't a president picked up public transportation as a major platform issue, or even a fucking first lady picked it up as an issue, you know?
It doesn't fund his campaigns.
Exactly, goddamn commie.
That's Pinko.
It's an issue.
That's Pinko. You're on the West Coast.
It's an issue. Doesn't the next first wife or husband need some? I don't know.
So
it'll
throw
be
out
the first wife issue.
We've been bashing Humvees and all that. We'll do that to the cows come
certainly.
Home, which I enjoy doing. But I want to posit to that the, actually the most dangerous thing on the road out there is other cyclists.
Wow.
Interesting.
Yes. And that's simply because we do not have an infrastructure that's been created for us, so we're always, you know, riding against the infrastructure, you know. Cindy and I live on a street that heads one way north, and we always have to head down it south, so we're always going against the one-way traffic just to get home.
all
a lot
the
of
time,
one-way streets.
Rather than having to do the four-block trip around the traffic properly. But and that's just because, you know, there's sidewalks for pedestrians and one-way streets to funnel car traffic. Mm-hmm. And the closest calls I've ever had is when I'm, like, cruising through a four-way stop, not stopping, and another cyclist is cruising through that same four-way stop, and mm-hmm. suddenly I'm, like, confronted with my mirror image going, holy fuck, and we sort of swing aside and just miss each other.
No, or we don't miss each other, and he realizes this is his girlfriend.
Yeah, like the most serious bike accident I have had in the last 2 years is when Cindy and I, when I made a right turn, and she didn't realize I was turning right and went straight through, and we crashed into each other.
So when you say that the biggest threat on the road is the cyclist, you're actually projecting, and you mean YouTube.
No, to everyone else. We're the biggest threat.
So watch out. Toronto. They'll be coming home in a few days.
Those are my main accidents I've been in. It's like hitting
with
people
Rich.
I know.
Oh,
when you ride with people you know.
Okay.
And you've been maybe drinking a little
yeah.
bit.
Yeah. We do that in Vancouver. We do a lot of group riding.
I say that on the
radio. Sometimes it accompanies some riders.
Yeah.
I think the biggest threat to bikers actually is that guy who goes down Ontario Street all the time with his shopping cart full of cans. And he goes down from like, I don't know, where does he go from like...
Oh, he surfs.
So yeah, he surfs his shopping cart. You've seen him.
I've seen him on Maine, actually.
Oh, really?
I've seen him on Ontario.
well,
and he's taking the lane.
Yeah, he's taking the lane. He just goes through, and of course, he's not going to stop for a stop sign because he can't. He can't stop at all, let alone for a stop sign.
But the one advantage that cyclists have is hearing. So he's pretty hard to not hear.
Yeah, you hear him from pretty far away.
And if you're wearing headphones, then you deserve what you get.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that we often can't hear each other. I mean, my bike squeaks and
especially
scrapes.
Those of us wearing helmets, we can't hear each other.
My helmet doesn't cover me. Nice try.
My winter helmet.
But it covers your psychic shield.
But bikes don't make
that noise. I can't see my aura.
It's not
visible.
It covers your third eye. We talk about legality and we talk about our experience and how we ride. These are laws, and the streets are designed for cars now. They didn't used to be. They used to be designed for integrated traffic with carriages and things like that.
Mm-hmm. And but scorchers, the fastest thing on the street.
Yeah, tell me about scorchers. Somebody mentioned.
Well, that's what bicycles used to be called, because before cars came along and bicycles were invented, they were the fastest thing
scorchers.
On the road.
And you know
what's
a scorcher?
Just a bicycle. That's what they used to call them before cars came along.
And we used
scorchers.
To war with Teamsters. We were in terrible warfare with Teamsters.
Oh,
teams of horses. Teamsters. Those Teamsters.
Like actual Teamsters
with team. Yeah. We used to frighten horses.
Oh, wow.
Thing. So they would try to aim for us.
Yeah. Oh my God! I was in Pakistan and I actually saw was on a bus and I actually saw a horse get spooked by a bus. It was pulling a cart and. We were going along, and the horse, it was one of those things where it's just normal traffic, and everyone treats the horses as if it's terrible, because all the drivers just treat horses as if they're cars, right, which they're not.
You get really close to them?
Yeah, and just like, oh, I'm going to cut them off, so I'll just cut right in there as if it was a car. But a horse doesn't like that, and this horse, it was the strangest thing. We were passing him, and the horse was stuck where it's like he had to decide, am I going to stop? Am I going to go between these two cars, or am I going to, like, swerve off? You know what I mean? Like, the horse is in a traffic situation you find yourself all the time, and the horse suddenly stumbled and and it was this weird, like, sound, and I saw, like, the horse made all these chalk marks on the ground, you know, like, rock scraping on pavement, and fell over flat on its stomach.
Wow.
And then got up really fast. But it was terrifying. It was terrifying to see this, like, and no one cared. Like, it was just like you feel like on a bike, right? It's like the cars were treating the horse as if it didn't have any feelings and if it wasn't exposed, right? Because to them, it's just a thing, right? But to drivers, it's just like it's in the way.
And that's the thing. Like, these are living, like, we are living creatures on the road. Horses are living creatures on the road. We have a different ability to react and be flexible. We had an ambulance come through our critical mass last month, and that's been one of the biggest criticisms of critical mass. You can't get out of the way of emergency vehicles. Well, this is what we did. There were maybe 400 or 500 of us. I'm not sure about the numbers last month.
Oh, I'm sure. People.
And you guys were on that ride. You came.
Heard about it. Never saw the ambulance.
Well, it was right on, I believe it was Granville. So it was like Granville and Broadway. It was a pretty busy intersection.
Wow.
And bikes are more maneuverable than cars.
Well, that's the thing. And that's the thing that people don't seem to understand. They think that blocking traffic is not voluntary. Yeah. And it is voluntary. We do it voluntarily. That's kind of the point, right? Mm. Although if you were to stretch out at 400 or 500 cyclists for blocks and blocks, that would suck too. So, you know, somebody called, we called ambulance, ambulance, and everybody moved over, like, just like water, and the ambulance went straight through. It was no problem.
That's awesome. That's better than cars.
Yeah, because they would just sit there, and half of them can't do it anyway.
Better than cops.
Better than Fox 2. So,
I was amazed that no one got mad at Critical Mass. Like, I didn't see anyone angry who was blocked. They were all waving. It was like a parade.
You should have seen it. Because I veered off of Critical Mass at one point because I had to go back to my parents. And boy, was my dad mad at it.
Matt.
Really?
He has a view of Burrard Street Bridge, right? And he was just like, you know, that's the typical, you know, these people don't pay taxes to maintain the roads, blah, blah, blah.
Oh,
blah,
we don't?
And, you know, and I'm like, they don't pay near the taxes that we pay to maintain the roads, blah, 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 blah. And I mean, there's something to be said about, you know, why they do the critical mass at 5:30 on a Friday. You know? I mean, to me, the thrill of the critical mass is the ride with a bunch of people and, you know, that run down Burrard over the bridge. But, you know, you could do all of that on a Thursday night, you know, at 9 o'clock, too. You know, is there some particular point about doing it on a Friday when everyone's rushing home to dinner with their kids? Mm-hmm.
To encourage them to, I don't know. I mean, I ride it too because I think it's really fun. I don't think it's the most effective outreach at all. In fact, I think it's not. But I do think that it's really good for cyclists.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
For,
oh, I love
new,
that.
New cyclists.
It's the only time I felt like I was a member of the Hells Angels.
Did you make a movie, Reg? What's it called and what's it about?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I made a movie called Monkey Warfare, which I consider actually less a movie titled Monkey Warfare than an act of monkey warfare.
Hmm. What do you mean, monkey warfare?
Well, you know, monkey warfare is monkey wrenching the system. You know, we don't have the broad social movement to support everyone picking up the gun and overthrowing the government in our affluent North American society, but that doesn't mean we can be content with how it is here. So we just have to figure out little ways to stub the big toe of the giant and fight against how the system would have our lifestyles slotted, or have us slotted into, you know, certain lifestyles, riding a bicycle and not owning a car. In fact, would be one sort of act of monkey warfare. Breaking into corporate headquarters and distributing anti-globalization pamphlets perhaps would be another example of monkey warfare. Recording interviews with progressive intellectuals and playing them on college radio. You know, maybe another act of monkey warfare. Hell, revolutionaries are definitely monkey warriors.
Are there intellectuals around here somewhere?
So we're talking about kind of things that are cheeky and subversive.
Cheeky and subversive, yes. You know, subversive and not cheeky even.
What role do you think humor might have?
Well, I mean, humor, I think, plays a very important role just because it leavens the potential earnestness and pretentiousness of the message. You know, the last thing I wanted to do was some kind of pedantic proto-revolutionary film, you know, so there's certainly enough with a big budget to wave the flag pro-Hollywood propaganda movies out there that we on the other side don't need to be so pro, or I mean propagandistic ourselves. You know, if they can't poke fun at themselves, at least we should be able to poke fun at ourselves, so, you know.
Is this
humor
a page
plays a big role. Like, Flick's thing is perfect, you know? At one point when my producers were saying we had to cut Flick's Molotov cocktail safety video out for legal reasons, which we still have, at one point I got so angry, I was like, well, that Molotov cocktail safety video says everything I want the movie to say. I think we should cut out the first 74 minutes before and...
What did they say?
They weren't too...
You're playing hardball there.
Yeah, well, they realized that, yeah, Reg is playing hardball at this point. The man won out.
So they were concerned about liability?
Well, to get to sell the film, you have to have something called errors and omission insurance. And
which is bogus, because no one's ever been sued in Canada for what they insure
you
for.
You know,
never,
you're
ever.
Arguing with the converted, Pat.
$20,000 for a feature film to get this insurance, and there's never been anyone in Canada sued under this category.
And errors and omissions?
It just means, like, you know, for instance, in our film, you know, there's, like, music that's used, there's these images that are used, all of this stuff, which was researched and cleared by Cindy. but they need to have the pieces of paper saying that there's been permission, you know, by this photographer, whoever owns the right to this image, that we can use it in the film, or whoever wrote this music and owns this music. music that we can use it. Well, in the case of Flick's Molotov cocktail safety video, the lawyers feel that we are, in a sense, by showing people how to make Molotov cocktails safely, committing a criminal act.
And, like, we could be prosecuted.
Would we even be liable for having a fictional comedy that has some instructions in it that people follow? Is it really
exactly.
us? Is it our fault? No.
I know. And I've seen a lot of movies about how to rob a bank.
Mm-hmm. In fact, that's
Which
all
is
there
a good
is
idea.
Movies about how to rob a bank.
Exactly. And
what are you guys doing later?
Is there... Let's talk in the movie. There is a bit of allusion to almost what could be termed a generation gap between activists as far as tactics go. And I want to know how significant you think that is. If you think, like, there's a lot of denigration of hippies, and certainly in Vancouver, that's, like, I got accused on the last critical mass of eating too many Brussels sprouts. And it's interesting, because I would be a person that I would kind of think would not, I don't really look like a hippie, I'm certainly not a pacifist by any means. So what do you think, how does it further what we're doing to ascribe a certain kind of character to what's happening now and differentiate it from the legacy of past movements, and how does it get us?
It's hard to answer your question because, you know, it is coming from that sort of standpoint that, yeah, there is some sort of advocacy message here. And, you know, I'm not trying to further anything. Differentiating these generations is more of not a differentiation of tactics, because I think the tactics remain constant. If Abbie Hoffman, who coined the term monkey warfare, and in his book Steal This Book actually outlined many techniques of monkey warfare, if SUVs were around in his time, I think he'd be all in favor of what's portrayed in the movie. The generational thing is more something about the idealism of youth and how, going out into the world, you think that you can reshape the world, and how these older characters have been beaten down by the system, so to speak, and don't think that they can reshape the world. And far from being a something that's resigned to the older characters or advocating what this younger character is going through, it's more to open a discussion and make people think about that dynamic between those two poles of thought and action.
Those two poles being?
Well, the resignation and, you know, the resignation of experience and wisdom, I guess, or jadedness.
Do you think that nihilism is something that ideally is a transition between those two? Because there is a certain kind of element.
No, nihilism is actually the end point into which it's evolving.
Wow.
Yeah, because it's interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't want to get it. I've had too many discussions of nihilism with Pat to actually drag him.
Is that true, Pat?
I have a different view of nihilism.
Yeah.
I subscribe to the 19th century nihilist view, which is the guys who had the blue sunglasses.
Yeah, yeah. Pat gets into
the actual
historical background.
They tried to blow up the Tsar, and they ended up blowing up a trainload of his jam by accident. They were terrible shots.
Yeah, yeah.
Whose jam did they blow up?
The Tsar. They were trying to blow up the Tsar's
train.
They were the one successful. No, it was before that. They blew up Tsar Nicholas I, and the result was that they shot Tsar Nicholas I, and the result was that Tsar Nicholas II came in, who was the terrible dictator who used that as an excuse to crack down.
But they shot Bush, and then Cheney became president.
Yeah, exactly. But that's not
sequitur. Well, he kind of is already. But wouldn't we tie that in with the legacy of anarchism? I mean,
yeah, they're the proto-anarchists.
Terminology is one thing, but okay.
Yeah.
Well, I would say that maybe nihilism and anarchy are two very different things, only because anarchy is about building, and nihilism is more about...
Now that's
yeah,
what the word has now come
now
to be.
Yeah, I mean that's why I didn't
no,
want to drag.
No, it means belief in nothing.
That's why that
it means. Oh, I don't believe in anything. I'm a nihilist.
Yeah, that's why I didn't want to drag Pan into it.
He's very
much into the specifics of the etymology of the word. I understand what you mean by nihilism, and I can speak to that.
And I don't.
Maybe if we talk, let's say that for the purposes of this conversation, the definition of nihilism that has currency.
Which is what? I don't know.
You know what you were just saying.
Which would be
rejection of belief systems.
Right.
Yeah. So what do you call a rejection of belief systems? Perhaps we shouldn't talk about nihilism, but we should talk about whatever you call a rejection of belief system.
I mean, rejectionism. That's what it is. You reject everything without thinking about it, or thinking about it and then rejecting it. And that's kind of pointless.
Well, or saying, what the young character in the movie?
Susan.
Susan has a bit of a perspective on everything being shit.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
or a realization, and it does move on to something else. That, for me, is what nihilism is about. It's about a general kind of resignation and hopelessness and unhappiness about the state of affairs, but it doesn't have the elements for me that represent something that actually is viable. It doesn't give us any solutions. We can complain about Hummers as much as we want, but we need to be doing something about
it.
Yeah. I mean, for me, nihilism is not about despair, though. I mean, I find it very liberating.
Wow. Like a stoicism kind of thing, like everything crumbling and...
Well, you know, I mean, it could be my particular background of a belief system, you know, Christian belief system that I was raised in, of an idea of heaven or hell, and you know, a Calvinist predestination towards one or the other. And what if you're predestined towards hell rather than heaven? Well, by eliminating both concepts, you know, it's much more comforting to me to know that if I die, it's just like I don't even know. And I won't even care. So I find nihilism actually a very comforting notion, you know. Not that I believe in nihilism.
Well, it's skepticism, right? To me, it's more about skepticism. It's about questioning everything. You know, I mean, I think activism is a philosophy. Activism itself, never mind left or right or what, socialist, anarchist.
Right.
I mean, the activists who are like pro-choice, the pro-life activists right now. Mm-hmm. I mean...
You mean anti-abortion activists.
The anti-abortion activists.
Exactly. Anti-choice.
But what I'm saying is, like, a pro-life activist, those people, what do? They get involved, they go around, they find other people who agree with them, they spread their message, they take a moral position, which we can't say is wrong, we disagree with it, but if they say that killing an unborn, you know, zygote is murder, then it's like, well, I don't believe you, and so I'm going to work to let people have a choice to do that. But I can't tell you that it's not, because, you know, it's a decision, a moral choice, and the fact is that those people, by being activists and by being community activists and creating networks and making websites and doing all the things that we do on the left here, those people are boxing Bush in, for instance, by not allowing him to just promise them whatever he wants and then do his own agenda. Like, the people on the far Christian right, who are kind of psychopaths in a certain way, but the thing is, he can't just say, well, I'm going to launch oil wars in Iraq and have Americans come home in body bags, because those right-wing people who are activists are actually on the phone to each other going, hey, man, we voted for this guy because we thought he was going to give us anti-abortion legislation, and now he's just having our sons come home in body bags from Iraq, and let's get organized and go stop him. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like that.
It is more complicated than people think it is. But also, I think I don't think you can say we can't figure out if it's moral or not. The fact that they're engaged with their environment is very moral. I think that's what we should all be doing.
Yeah.
I think that we all should be definitely engaging with our surroundings and certainly not letting things run themselves.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, that doesn't necessarily mean that we can't say that oppression, for example, is something that's immoral. Oppression is immoral.
No, and that's
taking
all
away people's
or capital punishment. Those same people are in favor of capital punishment by and large. You know,
but that's what I'm saying.
That's moral.
That's right.
I mean,
it's the innocence that they want to protect.
Well, there's only some life they care about. I mean, my favorite political cartoon is a bum sitting on the side of the road holding up a sign saying, give me money, I'm a former fetus, you know. You know, what lives are important? Which ones are we morally obligated to deal with, and what life are
we? And if we talk about choice, we could talk about, for example, cyclists are people who maybe don't... One of the implications of what we're doing is that we're not taking choice away from other people by riding a bike.
Yeah.
Drivers, by extension, actually are, and particularly the most heinous examples of those are being the larger, more polluting vehicles that we're seeing on the road. So in that sense, we can talk about morality in cycling. One of the reasons that I love cycling is just because it does cross a lot of boundaries, and it certainly can bring people together in great ways. I don't think that cycling is the end-all be-all. I'm not a purist. I'm actually a professional driver. But at the same time, you know, there's a morality issue at hand that I think we need to be righteous about.
Democracy.
Righteous in an ironic and humorous and hip way.
Yeah. But the thing about democracy is that you have to have, once in a while, you have to accommodate with people you disagree with.
What democracy? Okay.
No, ideal. I'm talking about the ideal that we want. You have to accommodate with people you disagree with.
Oh, totally.
There's danger. People who become activists about issues that I think are stupid and wrong. Like racist activists, you know, pro-choice activists, pro-life activists.
They're pro-race activists, actually.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, those people, they're being a slippery slope they don't know, because once they get involved and they see what's going on, they may have their world, they may become enlightened inadvertently because they've joined a world where you can't be closeted and sheltered when you're actually going out meeting people and trying to get things achieved politically through democratic activism. And that's why I think activism is a positive thing, you know what I mean, in that sense.
And being receptive as well, totally. Yeah. I'll sit down and talk to anybody. Yeah. I have friends who are born-again Christians who don't believe in dinosaurs. And that's okay. We still hang out, you know?
Yeah.
You know, once in a while we'll even talk about it because it's not a debate scenario. It's just something that I know about this person.
They don't believe the bone.
They don't believe... No. Right. It could be a different
aliens
timeline.
Aliens put them there.
Different timeline.
Oh, yeah. Different universe.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, the Pedal Revolution radio show, and that was an interview with the director of Monkey Warfare.
And we're still giving away one of the albums from this movie, so if you'd like to call the station, we're going to need you to tap dance or lie and say you're tap dancing and spell the word gorilla. And the number is 604-UBC-CITR.
And what makes this kind of, I think, a little daring for releasing an album is they didn't release it on a CD. They released it on vinyl. Why'd they do that?
That's a good question. I wish that they had done a 78 or an 8-track if they wanted to really make a splash. But I think it's mainly because the album cover is bigger. I think it's all about size.
The front cover.
Oh, we have somebody on. Super. Maybe we'll put them through to the board.
Hello, CITR.
Go ahead. Hello, they got shy.
Hi, yeah.
Well, anyway, Conrad's going to talk to them. The front cover is beautiful.
Can I put it through to the soundboard?
It's got this kind of exploding vehicle somewhere.
Hello, can you hear us?
I can, yeah.
Yay, okay, I get a round of applause every time I don't drop somebody on the caller.
How are you today? What's your name?
Colleen.
Welcome, Colleen. How you doing?
Pretty good.
Are you calling for a specific reason just to say hi, or did you have designs?
I have design. I heard an offering.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Excellent. So what are you doing right now, Colleen?
I'm driving and dancing, of course.
Ah.
Perfect. Okay. So if you give us your address, since you were tap dancing?
Well, you can give it to us off the air, but what you do need to do is spell a word for us. Can you do that?
For sure, yeah.
Go for it.
And what's the word?
The word is gorilla, as in warfare.
Oh, G-U-E-R-I-L-L-A.
Wow, like nothing. Like butter. That was fabulous. Okay, so you've won yourself a copy of the soundtrack to Monkey Warfare. You can pick that up at the premiere, which is going to be Friday, December 8th. That's tomorrow night. And it's going to be at the Granville Cinema, Granville 7. And, so when you get there, just give them your name and let them know that you deserve to have a copy of the soundtrack. Do you have a record player?
I do, in fact.
Wow, right on. Excellent. So you don't just have to lick it.
Right on.
Well, thanks very much. Are you going to be able to make it to the show tomorrow? Because if you can't, we'll figure out something else.
I'm actually supposed to be at a party tomorrow night.
Okay. But, yeah. Well, tell you what. Can you stay on the line and we'll talk to you in a bit. Right on. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks a lot.
Man, she's smart. I love it. Somebody's listening and they're smart. That's really wonderful. So what I'd like to do just before we go back into this interview is give you all a heads up about some of the coming events in the next couple weeks here. There is a Momentum magazine is going to be having a party on December the 16th. That's going to be at the Anza Club, which is 3 West 8th Avenue at Ontario, just on the bike route. And it starts at 8 p.m., goes till about 2 in the morning. The BC Klutz are going to be shaking their booty. They're an all-girl all-woman, all-female mini-bike dance troupe. And there's also Clancy's Angels, a postmodern rock gospel power choir supergroup. Wow. I can't believe I said that without spitting. And also the Revolutionists are going to be DJing at the end of the evening. So it's the 25th issue of the magazine. It's a great bicycle magazine, and it would be great to come out and support them. So if you want more info, you can phone 604-669-9850. This Sunday, December 10th, at 11 a.m. at Kitts Beach, you can go and meet a climate dinosaur. There's going to be a protest. It is a concerned citizens rally to say no coal for Christmas in Premier Campbell's riding. It's going to be, again, starting at 11 a.m. There's going to be music, hot chocolate, games, speakers, all sorts of stuff. And it's being planned by a group of neighbors in Campbell's Riding who are frustrated by the lack of government action on climate change. So you can come out and show your support for that. The group will also be announcing the winner of their first Climate Dinosaur Award. And the nominees include Federal Environment Minister Rona Ambrose for announcing before the global community that the Harper government supports everything about the Kyoto Protocol except the greenhouse gas reduction targets. So, fabulous! Whee! And also BC Energy Minister Richard Newfield for proposing to add obsolete coal-fired power plants to BC's energy production portfolio. You know, retro, I don't mind retro. I think it's great. I mean, I love records, for example, and if anyone's seen my closet or some of the things I wear, they'll understand. But maybe coal is not, doesn't come along with retro fashions, particularly. There are a couple of other things happening tomorrow night. One of them is the Margaret Charles Chopper Collective Rolling Ride. That's we start off at the Science World Gazebo by the main entrance there on Main Street. Just off of Main and Quebec. 6:30 p.m. we meet and we ride around 7. And again, the premiere of Monkey Warfare tomorrow night as well. There's also going to be another movie night coming up on Tuesday night. That's December the 12th at Spartacus Books, 7 p.m. Free Geek Community Technology Center is going to be showing a few movies. They'll show a documentary about the Portland Free Geek, also a movie called Car Park, which was produced by local design virtuosos, the Design Nerds, and it's a documentary about turning an old car into a garden. Also, there's going to be a movie called Revolution OS, which kind of describes the beginnings of open source and free software movement, which is actually quite subversive, just like riding a bike in many ways. The Midnight Mass Bike Ride is coming up. That's Thursday, December the 14th at 11:45 p.m. People meet at Grandview Park, which is Commercial and Charles. You can go to their website, midnight-mass.blogspot.com, for more information. And is there anything else? There might be. Am I missing? Oh, I know what I'm missing.
Yes, the Church of Pointless Consumerism. Yes, we have over 40 volunteers working on a production that's coming out on December 15th, 16th, and 17th at the Cambrian Hall. Where, yeah, it's the Church of Pointless Consumerism. We've got a choir, dancers, and a wild, crazy reverend ministry priest who's going to be offering salvation for a limited time discount special offer. And also, wow. as usual, there's always Vela Fusion coming up. And here's a small PSA.
On the last Friday of the month, the territorial mating call of the indigenous local cyclists is heard echoing through downtown Vancouver. Thousands of cyclists have once again reclaimed the streets in scared, belligerent motorists. But now, you wonder what is next. The night is too young, and you're feeling a little frisky. After all, there are only so many car tires you can peel in a day. Well, we have the solution. Vela Fusion Bicycle Dance Party. Burlesque, bands, dancing, DJs, and pirated movies. The last Friday of the month after Critical Mass. Come one, come all for a little primal rawliness. Doors open at 7:30 p.m. The Answer Club.
Okay. Right on. Okay, so we're just going to play the second part. We may get cut off because we talk too much. Also, I want to mention... Oh, am I on?
Oh, no, you can.
Okay, I want to mention
ahead,
one...
Go ahead, mention.
Thank you so much,
Feel
Conrad.
Free to mention anything you want.
We got buttons flying all over. It's that foot massage. It relaxed me so much. I'm having trouble sitting upright. But I do want to mention that there is a Bicycle Bee potluck happening this weekend as well, and it's at 5:30 on Sunday. It's in the Commercial Drive area on Williams. So if you want more information, go to bicyclebee.blogspot.com, and that's B-E-E. And here we go.
Out there. I think in preface, one of the things that I thought was really interesting to see was things that I've never seen represented on the screen before. For example, people taking the lane.
Not a bike thief, bike liberator.
Bike liberator, right, because bikes want to be free. Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, you'd be amazed at how many people will just, you know, leave their... I mean, that's what the whole thing in the movie was, like, us going down our bike route in Toronto and seeing, like, the same bikes sitting there day after day, and it being a cool bike, and it's just like, fuck, are we just going to let this thing rust away? It's a cool bike. Let's grab it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and actually, we went and bought a... circular saw type thing to saw
the
through
size,
the kryptonite. And we haven't gone that far yet.
We didn't fit my girl.
We got the tools.
Right, and the will.
And I see nothing wrong with it, man. If someone's just going to leave their bike there, you know.
Unloved.
And in
unloved,
the law
exactly.
In Toronto, according to a guy who runs a bike shop, told us there that if a bike is left in the same spot unattended for like a month, then legally, well, the city is supposed to come and unlock them all.
Wow.
Cut them loose. But they don't because they're like, you know, behind or whatever.
Right.
But,
well, it's also how can they keep...
But it's considered abandoned legally in Toronto after a month.
Really?
So you can liberate. So it is legal to actually liberate if you've been buying it for a month.
Just kind of like squatters' rules.
This is not to say we're advocating stealing legitimate bikes. Let's make that clear.
Yeah.
Just saving bikes.
Just
saving
orphans.
Illegitimate
but that's
bikes.
Saving the orphans.
Yeah. Take some of those bikes you liberate that you don't have space for around your place and lock them to cars. Toronto's underrated as a bike city, I think.
Really?
I have to say, yeah. It's I find it better than Vancouver for biking. Less rain and less hills.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah, there's no hills. I mean, I was following you around.
Mm-hmm. For sure. It's probably less because I'm an ardent cyclist and more because I'm too cheap to pay the bus fare, which is really expensive.
Well, and some people decide rightly that it's too dangerous to ride your bike. I mean, I think that every time my girlfriend comes home late at night after biking somewhere, I'm like, oh, I wonder if she got run over. You know, we're in a world where there's cars on the road, you know?
I think what shiny thing on the side of the road in the garbage has Cindy spotted that she's trying to strap onto her bike?
Well, it's like the argument against SUVs. I mean, I was at Z Media Institute. Mm-hmm. Z Magazine runs that.
Mm-hmm.
And one of these super anarchist types who, you know, they've been around since the 60s. They were involved in all that crap in the 60s. Like, they were in the core of it.
Mm-hmm.
And their view is once in a while they'll say, like, well, you know, middle-class women in the U.S. drive SUVs because they've been terrified that they're going to be raped by black men. That's why they drive SUVs. You know, they've been propagandized and brainwashed. And, you know, and also, if you drive a small car, you're going to get run over by an SUV. You know, there's an argument to be made that people are doing it not because
they don't think they're going to get carjacked by black men.
Yeah, so, and that too, yeah.
So, but what we're talking about is a vehicular arms race, then.
Yeah, exactly. That's what some people are stuck in. And it's, you know.
Yes.
That's why
bicycles
I bike.
Included. Bicycles included.
Yeah, I bike, but it's like
so
every time I bike.
Are the urban gorillas, though, of that arms
it's
race.
It's true.
Yeah.
Lightweight. Flexible, durable.
Like the scene in the movie where they smash the SUV was actually, because the movie's low budget, all we could afford to do was buy a junky SUV for $500 and smash it. But the scene was actually inspired by a game of chicken between me and a Humvee who got pissed off because I wasn't getting out of his way and he's honking at a intersection. So he decided to, like, you know, swing the steering wheel towards me, and I wasn't taking any of it, and I started kicking his door in, and we did this whole thing, and then he actually pulled over, and I sort of swung around and pulled a U-ey and got away. Cindy, meanwhile, is behind me watching the whole thing and starts coming after the guy with the bicycle lock in her hand.
Yeah. Wow.
That happens to you guys all the time. I saw that exact incident happen with the taxi.
Yeah, he did. With
a
taxi.
Yeah, that's true. maybe Cindy and I have the problem.
Yeah.
Well, I get upset. Like, when I see people harassing, you know, because that's the thing is cars start people start using cars as weapons.
Yeah.
And they will come after a cyclist. And I think what I really hate the most is that, like, I feel like they're, you know, public transportation should be better and should be free and all stuff. But I feel like a lot of times, like, you know, buses and streetcars are sort of at odds with cyclists, and I really hate it when buses are really aggressive with cyclists, and it happens like way too much. I mean, my little sister has this good friend in Seattle, this guy Bennett, who's an avid cycle dude, and he rides around with a baseball bat in a baguette bag in the back of his, his bike. In Seattle.
We have enough momentum and we have enough power that we can actually enter into a different state of dialogue, I think, with drivers and set an example to as far as road rage goes. And we're seeing more and more incidences of it. And it's almost becoming a class war. And I think that we have lots of opportunities to turn that around and turn those incidents into subversive moments as opposed to just reaffirmations. But yeah. I don't always practice what I preach. I certainly kick cars and dented them.
I know. I'm pretty defensive. I never do that. I mean, if someone's being an asshole, I just like, whatever. You know, I'm like,
yeah.
Like, you know, of course, anytime you're on a bike and you try to turn left the legal way, which is like going into the left lane and waiting for your chance and then turning left. Of course, every car that's anywhere near you honks and screams or whatever, and just like, whatever, buddy, just wave and smile. Like, I'm not going to get mad. Like, who cares? Like, you know, like, it's hard not to do it, but you just take a deep breath and just go, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
You're a loser.
Or, like, if they honk and it's like, hi, or, wait, thank you.
Yeah.
Or I know a really good way to deal with it. Like, my little sister bought me this thing that I'm really excited about, and I use all the time when I can keep it pumped up, but I have one of those air horn things.
Yeah.
And so, and the thing is, the nozzle actually comes off. And so when people honk at me, when I'm just doing something normal and legal, like, I honk back at them. And I often will wave, hi, you know, like, I don't know you, but I'm honking back at you. And they'll honk again, and I'll keep honking until my air runs out. But another thing you can do that the aforementioned not person named Bennett told me is you can just take the horn thing off, the and you can, because it
just
spray detachable.
The air in their face?
Well, if their window is down, you can actually just hold it into there. Because they don't, I don't think cars realize, and when I was just, before I got my bike, you don't realize how loud a horn is for outside of the car.
Yes.
Right.
You only hear the inside horn voice.
Yes.
Well, the outside horn voice is very loud. And so if they have a window down at all, you can take the air horn and you can stick it in their window and honk it, and then they'll know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the fine line of making someone aware that they've done this to you as a cyclist and just, you know, forever pissing them off and wanting them to kill cyclists. And how to do that. I mean, you know, I respect what you're saying, Flick, in terms of, you know, whatever, and just holding your own and all that. I think that a driver generally would just slough that off as asshole cyclists. I don't think to credit, they're not going to suddenly seek out to try to kill cyclists, you know,
or you,
or you. But I think that there's something, you know, and I don't know what it is that can be done to, you know, drive home the sense that bikes are out there on the road, you know. And when I say something that can be done, some kind of violent action.
Well, I mean, I don't know. It's just like, I don't know. You have people who drive, and when someone starts honking and screaming at you, it's because they're an irrational idiot. And there's not much you can do at that point other than just leave. Someone who's showing that they're an aggressive idiot by screaming at you, like, I don't need to provoke them further in any way. It's just like, okay, well, I'm going away from you.
Yeah.
You know, in this situation, it's like, you can't, it's like at a protest and there's a cop. You can't talk the cop into, like, oh, taking off his uniform and joining your side at that moment.
It's like, yes, you can.
Not at that moment.
You can certainly plant the seeds.
Oh, yeah, you can. You can. But if there's a guy coming at you with a shield and a bat, you're not going to go, hey, man.
Okay, that's not the moment, maybe.
You know what I mean?
I thought you just meant the guys
when there's the line and everyone's just facing each other and you got a couple hours to kill while you're all waiting to see what happens, that's when you do it. But if the cops are coming at you, you know, that's not when you start having a conversation.
But that's not the time for conversation, but certainly there are actions that you can do and body language that you can project that will actually give them pause for...
Yeah.
The moment.
I just think if someone cuts you off, you know, in a well-placed kick, you know, that doesn't damage their car, will at least let them know that they did something and they should watch out for you. And you balance it out. I mean, I kind of believe, weirdly enough, in some sort of traffic karma. You know, I don't. I mean, in the case of that Humvee that ended up chasing...
So you're listening to CITR 101.9... Pedal Revolution Show, and we've got exactly 1 minute and 45, 44, 43, 42.
Yeah, so you keep counting, Conrad. I'm just going to say goodbye to everybody in Vancouver, and just to let you know, we do have to cut off the interview early. However, it will be available for download on the website, and hopefully today will be our first successful podcast, and at any rate, it'll be up there as an MP3 and an AUG for those of you who are using open source. So thank you very much, and have a safe week in the ruts on the road.
And did you know it's Ebony's birthday?
Oh, yeah, the show upcoming. It's the DJ's birthday, so... you can all sing it to yourselves privately while you tap dance and spell the word gorilla.
Phone in and wish everybody a happy birthday.
Right on. Take care, everybody. See you later.
Take the lane.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I thought you had to play.
See if you want that.